Shrink Wrap Radio number 53, Tibetan Buddhist Psychology, October 7, 2006. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
Stop the thoughts, not really stopping the thoughts. We never can stop the thoughts, but definitely stop, following thoughts, and then definitely thoughts not going to make any difference. Mm-hmm. Thoughts is just thoughts. It's nothing. Reality is there. So once you realize that thoughts is nothing there, then there's actually nothing to stop and nothing to create.
That was the voice of Neten Choling Rinpoche, a 33-year-old Tibetan Lama who was recently in the San Francisco Bay Area for the screening of his just-released film on the life of Milarepa. Milarepa was an 11th-century Tibetan yogi, folk hero, and saint who's greatly revered throughout Tibet. Milarepa, who early in his life had murdered to avenge his parents and later reformed through meditation, is considered to be a role model for achieving enlightenment in a single lifetime. The opportunity to interview Neten Choling Rinpoche arose unexpectedly, and I was pleased to jump on it. This young Rinpoche has not only directed his first feature-length film, but also heads up three different monasteries in India, Bhutan, and Tibet. He's hoping that the film will bring in enough money to help him feed and clothe some 40 destitute young boys he's taken in, as well as the many monks he's responsible for. The Rinpoche became acquainted with the world of film at age 19 when he starred in a feature-length film about young Tibetan monks called The Cup. If you haven't seen this film, I highly recommend it. You could probably find it at a good video rental store. The actress Sharon Stone has been quoted as saying, "What Neten Choling is doing with Milarepa is fantastic, and I'm proud to be able to help in promoting the film. The film is a path to our own spiritual dimension, and his work with orphans a reflection of the larger human values that connect all of us. Neten Choling has put it all on the line, and now we all need to deliver by helping him." So says Sharon Stone. There was a single showing of the film here in Northern California at UC Berkeley, where I went to interview the Rinpoche. I was joined by my friend Bert Kaplan from Shrink Wrap Radio episode number 10. After the interview, we were able to attend a private reception for the Rinpoche and then see the film, which will soon be available on DVD. Now, English, of course, is not the Rinpoche's native language, and you'll need to listen closely in order to follow him. He makes reference to some Buddhist terminology that you may not be familiar with. For example, samsara, which refers to the notion that what we commonly take as reality is but an illusion. He also makes reference to two branches of Buddhism, Theravada and Vajrayana. Theravada is thought to be the oldest branch of Buddhism and is practiced mainly throughout Southeast Asia by an estimated 100 million followers. Vajrayana is practiced mainly in Tibet and neighboring areas, and emphasizes special techniques for achieving enlightenment. So with that intro, let's get into the interview.
Okay, well, I'm here with Rinpoche and with my good friend Bert Kaplan, who starred in a previous interview, and Bert is a longtime Buddhist meditator, mm-hmm. and also has a background in psychology as well. So I want to thank you, Rinpoche, very much for the opportunity to interview you for our program, and in a couple of hours you're going to be screening your new feature-length film for an audience at the University of California at Berkeley. So let's start with your film, and I understand it's about the Tibetan hero and saint Milarepa, who lived in the 11th century. And I doubt that most of my listeners will have much familiarity with Milarepa. So perhaps you could tell us, why did you decide to make a film about him?
So Milarepa is one of the yogi that all the schools in Tibet, everybody respect.
Mm-hmm.
Because that his life story, what he been through, what's his realization. And then he achieved enlightenment in one lifetime. And because of all those stories, I think people really inspire by his story.
I see. He did achieve enlightenment during his lifetime.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I, you know, since I'm very young, I'm reading his life story, and it's really inspired me also.
Okay.
It's giving me a lot of hope for my spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
And it's inspired me to do more meditation and more practice.
Okay.
And then also, of course, that so many other things that in the story that he realized that revenge and killing and all those things not really solving problems, actually is making more problems, create more problems. So all those things there, so I thought maybe it's a good time to make a story. It's a good time to make a story,
yes,
like this.
Right.
And since the movie is really powerful and it can reach a lot of people and it can influence. And when I was young, you know, my tutor is always stopping me to go to watch movie because he thinks movie is all about, you know, killings and romantics,
yeah,
and all those things. So then actually it's movie, if it can influence the bad way, then also definitely influence also can be a good way so we can influence.
Yes, definitely. And it occurs to me that I read a little bit about the movie and the story, mm-hmm, on your website, milarepamovie.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the story is about initially he was seeking revenge, was it? His father,
yes,
got killed,
yes,
and so he was going to,
yeah,
seek revenge, and he went to a sorcerer, mm-hmm, to learn evil ways to put a magical spell on his,
yeah,
enemy.
Yeah.
But he ends up getting enlightened and choosing a different path.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me that, and I'm wondering if this is true, in a way, this is part of the example that His Holiness the Dalai Lama has set for the whole world. Tibet has been attacked and grievously harmed, and yet the Dalai Lama has stood for peace in spite of that. And rather than going for revenge,
mm-hmm,
has really been a shining example, as have other Tibetan Buddhists and lamas, for forgiveness and for setting a positive example.
Mm-hmm.
Was that at all in your mind when you chose this story?
Yes, the part of, definitely. Also, the Dalai Lama is also, you know, doing the same thing, that the more compassionate way,
yes,
and more peaceful way to, you know, solve the problem.
Right.
And because of the... of course, Buddha, is an enlightened person, and
yes,
then whatever he says, it should be no mistaken. And then I think it's quite true that Buddha is like a 2,500 more than years ago, and
yes,
still whatever he teaching, whatever he says is. Because whatever he says is not something that he didn't make up. You know, it's whatever he talks is about natural and truth of natural.
Yes.
So that always is there. There's nothing to change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why. So all the, you know, the peace way and the compassionate way, you know, do those things. I think that's always help,
yes,
and always is the right way.
Yes. Yes. And so, what's the main message then that you hope to communicate through the movie? What's the message that you hope people will,
mm-hmm,
take with them and keep in their heart?
So this is the life of Milarepa, but this is only the beginning of his life story.
Mm.
And it's not a full his life story. So in this one is more focused in, and for general audience, definitely that revenge and killing, harming other, is not going to solve any problems.
Okay.
It's actually going to create more problems. So So this is the main message that I'm trying to focus on.
And it's a very timely message given everything that's going on in the world right now.
That's what I'm thinking and hoping to, you know, people can get it.
Yes, yes, definitely. Now, it's...
Then, of course, from the spiritual point of view, then definitely there's impermanence and how samsara is suffering and everything's there.
Yes, samsara. Yeah. Now, I understand one of the reasons that you've made the film is to raise money for boys who are in an orphanage that you're founded, that you're supporting. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, definitely. If you know, movie can make some money, but I don't think it's going to make money, but I'm not sure. But if some make money, then definitely it goes for the... like 1 year ago, I have like 40 kids from the Himalaya region, from Nepal, and some of them father has died, and some of them is not, both the families died, and so I have like 40 kids there in my monastery right now, and then so I'm trying to give them my education, and then also all the health wise and everything. So definitely it goes to there, and also in my monastery in India, we have like 120-130 monks in India.
Oh my goodness.
And also I have a monastery in Tibet, and also we have more than 100 monks.
Oh my goodness.
And they, all their health and their education and everything that we have to take care of. So definitely.
Well, I hope the film is successful and helps to raise money. And certainly I'll be putting a link on our website to your website so that people... hopefully we'll be moved to buy the DVD when it comes out.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah,
that's
and that
really
might great. Help to Thank raise you. Some yeah. money, too. Now, it's pretty unusual to find a person who's both a Tibetan Lama and a movie director. How did that happen?
I think it's like, I don't know, it's my karma, I think. Because, of, you know, where I grew up, where I stay in India, is there's no film schools, no nothing. There's no filmmakers.
Yeah.
There's nothing. It's a very remote place, and they don't. When like 6-7 years back, they don't even have a TV there.
Wow.
Forget about the big movie theaters and movie makers. So, I think it's just the first time I ever seen making a film is the Little Buddha, the Bhattalogy. He made the movie about a live Buddha called Little Buddha.
I saw that movie. Yeah. Was that the boy in America? I've seen several movies, and I'm wondering, is that the one where they find a little boy who's in,
America? Yeah, it's sort of a two-story happening together with the life, you know, life of Buddha and some other story mixed up, So anyway, you know, the shooting, some of the shooting takes place in Bhutan and some of the Nepal. So when he doing the shooting in Bhutan, I was there also. And so they need some extras. So then I sent all the my monks to play in the extras. So and that time, the first time I ever seen them making a movie. So I thought it's quite interesting, but still I never thought that I'm going to make a movie.
Really? Yeah, that's quite a big step.
Yes.
And were you in another film called Tin Cup?
The Cup. Yeah, it's actually made by my friend Kenzo Norbu, the director of The Cup. So he made a movie, is shot in my monastery in India.
Oh.
And then all the my monks acted in that movie, and also he wanted me to act in that movie. So I said, okay. And then, and from there, then I got some little bit of experience. And
now, was that the movie in which the monks, I think, were playing soccer?
Yes.
I saw that movie. It was a wonderful movie. Now I have to go see it again so that I can see you in it.
It's quite different. It's quite different. I was very, young and teen.
How old were you when you were in that film?
At that time, I think I'm like 18 or 19, something like that.
Okay, so we'll be looking for you there. Now, I think the initial way that most people in the West, in this country at least, got exposed, people of my age and Bert's age, we won't say what that is, got exposed to Buddhism mostly through Zen Buddhism. So I'm wondering, what are the distinctive features of Tibetan Buddhism, say, compared to the way Buddhism is practiced in India and Japan? I know that there are a lot of similarities, but I think in Tibet you have your own special approach as mm-hmm. well.
Mm-hmm. I think all the basic and is same, mm-hmm. that how we are in samsara, how you know samsara works, and because of the all this how to say karma, and how it works with the then we're stuck in samsara.
And samsara means illusion?
Samsara right? means yeah, samsara means sort of illusion. Mm-hmm. Samsara means in this world that yeah, illusion, I think.
Okay. Yeah, that this world seems real to us, but mm-hmm. it's not the ultimate reality.
Yes, definitely, yeah. So all those things are the same, and just the difference in Tibetan Buddhism has the Vajrayana path, and that is most of the places like Thailand and Japan. Mm-hmm. I think Japan, there's some Vajrayana before, but I'm not quite sure because I never met any really great teacher in Japan.
Okay.
And, yeah. So most of that area is like a Theravada and the tradition.
Mm-hmm. The Theravada.
Mm-hmm. And then Tibetan has, of course, we have a Theravada, and top of that we have a Vajrayana.
Vajrayana.
And that is, I think, is different. So I think basically everything is the same, just that few method is different.
Okay, some different methods.
Different methods. Yes. So Theravada, mostly the meditation is that the Vipassana and Shamatha meditation.
Which is, a lot of our listeners won't know what those words mean.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, Shamatha and Vipassana is that mainly because of our mind right now is like a water with the dust, you know, mm-hmm. shaking, and then we couldn't see clearly.
Yes, it's all cloudy.
It's very cloudy. Mm-hmm. So once you don't see the clearly, then you couldn't see the truth or naturals.
Right.
And then once, you know, you didn't touch the water for maybe some time, and then slowly all the dust go down, and then you can see water is very clearly.
Yes.
Then you can see the reality.
Yes.
So what happened is that our mind is similar. We have so many distractions, so many things, thoughts in our mind happening. And so those meditation dust is that calm down your mind and thoughts, and all the emotion thoughts, whatever, you know, all things come down and make slow, and then you can see more clear.
That's the Vipassana way.
That's the Vipassana
way. Calm the mind.
Calm the mind.
To get the clarity.
To get the clarity.
Okay.
And then of course, once you see clarity, then slowly you draw is more and more going to open, and you can see more and more you can clear that you can see that until you get enlightenment. Mm-hmm. So then the Vajrayana path and tradition method is that they will try to show you the direct whatever experienced by the enlightened person.
Okay.
The, you know, Theravada in their tradition is take you to there by slowly open up your drawer. And Vajrayana path is directly trying to tell you that it's the enlightened person, whatever their experience is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to show enlightened person's experience, trying to show that is, then there's many different methods to show that.
Yes, okay. So the techniques to help one achieve enlightenment in this lifetime.
Yes, it's, yeah, but the quicker
right
time
it.
To, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. In the West, in recent years, there's been a tremendous explosion of interest in Eastern approaches to spirituality. For example, the practice and teaching of yoga has become really mainstream in much of America and in Europe. Do you have any idea about why that would be so?
Yes, I think, you know, yoga is that I think really helpful for the your health-wise, mm-hmm. and then also the because of the mind is right now too much depend on the body also.
Okay.
So once your body is you know, healthy and nice, also mind also is going to help to, you know, things more clear and more sharper. And
yes.
Yeah. So I think that's why I think it's quite helpful, but I never take the actually that Hindu yoga.
Right.
But in Tibetan Buddhism, we have also the yoga, but we teach all those yogas only for the spiritual part, not for the not for the health wise, just not for that reason.
Yeah, my question wasn't really just about yoga, but more about Eastern spirituality in general, meditation, all of it. Do you have any idea why people on this side of the world seem to have so much hunger and interest?
I see, okay. Yes, I think because in the West, especially until now, they are so busy with, you know, the outside things. And, you know, I think all the people, everybody is same that that once they don't have, they want something that they don't have.
Okay.
And so until now, there are things, once you have wealth and then money and house or whatever we wanted, we have, then we thought this is the end, that we achieve everything. We should be really happy.
Right.
And everything should be fine. But now, you know, like America and, you know, those places like really developed country, and they, most people, they got everything and what they want. It's not that big problem, and but still now they realize that actually something is not there.
Something's missing. Yeah.
So then I think now they're looking for beyond that. Mm-hmm. So now I think they found it out that actually that they're not only the outside. There's a they're different. They're way from the inside that we can actually achieve the ultimate. Happiness or whatever.
So what do you see as the value then of meditation? Maybe you've already spoken to that a little bit, but a lot of my listeners are interested in meditation. Some people maybe are on the edge of it, and they're asking themselves, well, why should I do this? Why should I meditate?
Meditation is, I think, many different ways is really helpful. Example like shamatha meditation, if you do forget about the, you know, enlightenment, but in right now in your situation, sometimes, you know, your emotion, your thoughts is makes you difficult and a lot of stress and everything, and then through the meditation definitely is when you're doing the meditation and in that stage. And there's no thoughts, and there's no emotion should be there. So, and that wise, then, you know, definitely you release from all those stress.
Okay.
And then if you release from the stress, then, you know, and health-wise and everything is going to go well, you know.
Yes.
So definitely is really helpful for the just normal wise.
Yes.
And then, of course, then definitely for the spiritual part, then, you know, they opens up more and more. You can see more and more clear and insight.
Now, I've heard from a number of my listeners who have asked me for any advice about how they can bring this discipline into their life. They're so busy, as you say, with external life that they have trouble establishing the discipline and concentrating. Do you have any advice for people who are trying to learn to get started with meditation and make the time?
But definitely you need determination.
Determination.
And persistent.
Persistence.
Definitely you need that. You have a little from the beginning when you start. I think you know you need that. You need those things, and then top of that, then I think most easier is that I think important thing is the mindfulness. Mindfulness, I think, is very, very important. Mm-hmm. When you don't know what you're doing, if you're not in mindfulness, then you will just go after, you follow the thoughts, you follow your emotion.
Yes.
And you don't have any idea So then you just keep following that and you get into more and more deeper and more good. So if you have a mindfulness all the time, most of the time, and then suddenly, example, like when you get jealousy or angry, then suddenly you realize yourself that, oh, I'm getting angry, I'm get jealousy. So then you don't have to follow that your anger and jealousy, because then you will know it's useless to follow that. Mm-hmm. Because if you follow that, it's not going to help anything.
So you're going to break your automatic patterns.
Yes.
As you become aware of, and I guess through meditation, you learn to watch your mind and to become aware of these emotions as they come up.
Yeah.
Instead of just going on automatic, as we tend to do.
So, yeah, definitely, example like Vipassana meditation, you know, when you focus on your breathing or your focus on your sensation. So once you focus on that, then there's no thought there. Because of the our mind is always attached to sensation. Everything is a sensation. That if you like something, this is sensation.
Yes.
If you don't like something, this is also sensation.
Yes.
And so this is, if you really think deeply, it's just your thoughts. So it's really difficult from the beginner to don't follow your thoughts. It's quite difficult, but definitely you can, you know,
you can learn that with practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I think maybe it's easier if you're in a monastery, right, where everybody's doing if you're in life, driving cars and having a job.
Yeah, because definitely it should be better because of the... For their job is full-time job.
Yeah.
For only that doing
in the
this.
Monastery,
yes.
It's a full-time job.
Yes. So for normal lives, and they have other things to take care of also. But if you can do it, that way is actually more stronger and more powerful because of you have to face more difficulties. You have to challenge more difficulties. So that way also improve your meditations more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to know a bit about your own life. You know, for example, how did you become a lama? Is this something that you're born into or you're trained into it? Tell us a bit about your early life and then how you came to this place.
There's a, you know, some people are there, they want to become monk and they want to study Buddhism, they're interested in the spiritual path. And some people like me and they sort of, in my story, and they recognize me as a reincarnation of somebody.
Okay, the reincarnation.
And that's how they founded me. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got into the monastery.
Okay, so you were how old when they recognized you?
I was three years old. Yes,
yeah.
First they found me.
And I don't know if it was in Little Buddha or one of the other films where they brought some objects for the child to recognize mm-hmm. from the previous incarnation. Did they do that with you?
No. Because there's a few different ways to recognize.
Oh.
And one way is like that way. I think you saw the movie Kundun. And that,
yes, I did
Dalai Lama.
Yes.
That actually they take some, they, you know, past incarnations,
yes.
Things, and they, you know, they choose that
right.
The right one.
Right.
So for my case, they're recognized by some other high lama.
Okay.
Example like for me, recognized by the 16th Karmapa, and then other my teacher, Thubu Khenzo Rinpoche, and so they give and my father's name and my mother's name, and then my date of birth and my and place of my country and city, and then they look for that, and they look for exactly, and they go to their, you know, country and place, and then they look for exactly father's name, mother's name, and then boy of the date of birth, and how they found me is like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you say that, I think you said the 16th Kamapa.
Yes.
Does that refer to a lineage of 16 generations?
He's the 16th incarnation of the Kamapa.
The 16th incarnation.
Yes, yes.
And you're in that lineage then now?
I'm not really in that lineage, but their lineage is that Karmapa's lineage.
Okay.
And it's we all same, but yeah, it's Karmapa is different.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's anything that you'd like to tell our listeners that we haven't covered yet.
Nothing so much, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So maybe we've covered it all. Bert, I wonder if there's any question that you have, and if you do, just come over here and ask it.
Yes, Dave. I'm sitting here. I'm interested as a practitioner, meditator, in more specifically in your practice, how you practice, how much, what techniques you might use. If you could address that to some degree.
So there's many different techniques there, and. So most easier way to describe is that basically we're saying that everything is by our mind. Mind and thoughts is basically actually the same but different name, mind and thoughts. There's without mind, there's no thoughts. Without thoughts, there's no mind. So basically most of the technique is that we have to go beyond the mind. If you are in the mind state, there's always the dualism, that there's right, there's left. There's right, there's wrong. There's good, there's bad, always. It's the natural, it's like that. So Vajrayana technique is that you have to go beyond the mind. So beyond the mind is that we can't describe the beyond the mind. Just that when you're doing the practice and teacher going to teach you through the meditation that how you experience your beyond mind. So then a Latin person is actually there, they recognize, we say it's also nature of mind. Nature of mind is the actually the beyond the mind. Yes. So mind is actually, it's the just sun in the light. A sun is like a the nature of mind, and the light is the mind. And so that's the main technique that we're trying to do, that we have to stay in beyond the mind.
So in to do that, do you try to stop thoughts?
Stop the thoughts, not really stopping the thoughts. We never can stop the thoughts,
right.
But definitely stop, following thoughts, and then definitely thoughts not going to make any difference. Thoughts is just thoughts. It's nothing. Reality is there. So once you realize that thoughts is nothing there, then there's actually nothing to stop and nothing to create.
Oh, that's a good place for us to wrap this up. That's a good statement. So I want to thank you once again for the opportunity to have this interview. And again, I will put a link on the website to your website so people can find out more about your work and about the film.
Thank you.
The DVDs. Yeah. And I really wish you all success with your efforts. And
thank
I hope
you.
This film finds a big audience.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks
thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Netan Choling Rinpoche. I cut the interview off where I did because the people who were responsible for getting him place to place were sticking their heads in the door and seemed to be signaling me that it was time for him to move on to other appointments. However, my friend Bert Kaplan was on a roll with his questions and continued with another one or two after I'd turned off the recorder. Of course, as soon as the recorder was off, the Rinpoche loosened up considerably and began speaking much more naturally and fluently. I really wish now I had kept the recorder on. Bert was pressing him to say just how often he meditates and for how long. Now, I'm not sure how precisely the Rinpoche understood Bert's question, but we were both startled at his answer. Of course, that's what one hopes for from a spiritual teacher, isn't it? To be startled every now and then? Still, we were surprised to hear him advise not to push too hard. He seemed to be saying, don't force yourself to meditate. Do it when you feel like doing it, and for as long as feels right to you. So this advice was quite surprising to us because many teachers from the Far East can come across as quite stern. On the other hand, this advice probably needs to be taken in the context of someone who's been meditating all his life. So his sense of meditating when you want to might be quite different than ours. At the same time, I must say it confirms my own lazy man's philosophy of enlightenment, though. So I was glad to hear it. I do believe that when we try too hard, our efforts sometimes turn against us. By the way, both Bert and I, along with about 1,000 other people, very much enjoyed the Rinpoche's film, The Life of Milarepa. And by the way, Milarepa is spelled M-I-L-A-R-E-P-A. You can find out more about the film and order it on DVD at www.milarepamovie.com. You will also find a boxed 3-DVD set there containing the Milarepa film as well as an exclusive 4-hour teaching by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. According to the site, the teaching provides a rare and concise introduction to the Dzogchen path as well as the Dalai Lama's own rendering of the life story of Milarepa. My apologies for any mispronunciations. I've titled this episode Tibetan Buddhist Psychology. Now, some people might question the psychology designation. However, in my way of thinking, consideration of how to find inner peace and harmonious living should be part of the job of psychology. You might argue, yes, but this is about religion. However, the central practice of Buddhism is meditation and does not require any particular set of religious beliefs. At this point, there's a very large body of scientific psychological literature on the effects of and the value of meditation. The call is simply to watch the contents of one's own consciousness as objectively as possible. So in a sense, the yogis of the East have been practicing a sort of science for thousands of years. That is, they look inside instead of outside. They've shared the findings of this inner science in a vast literature, and there's considerable agreement and consistency in the reports of those who've taken this inner voyage. As I've probably mentioned before, I see a fascinating convergence between East and West, inasmuch as both are now saying that what you think, what you tell yourself, what you believe, has an impact on your whole being. This is really what I'm getting at with my tagline, "It's all in your mind." Interestingly, one of the first schools of Western psychology was called introspectionism. The theory was that trained observers would be able to make important psychological discoveries about the structure of the mind. This school of thought was overshadowed after a bit by a succession of other approaches. But who knows? Maybe those introspectionists were onto something.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head.
As most of you know, I've just returned from 2 weeks in Italy, where I went to co-lead a 5-day personal growth workshop with my friend Dr. Ron Alexander. I promised to tell you about my trip, so here it is. It began with several days in Rome. It was my first time in that city, and I initially found it somewhat overwhelming. My hotel was off on the edges of the city, far removed from all the tourist sites, and a bus and metro strike just happened to be going on at that time, which made getting around very challenging. Also, taxi cabs are not plentiful the way they are, say, in New York City. So initially, I was feeling pretty frustrated in Rome. However, I was able to meet up with Shrink Wrap Radio listener Caroline, who's an American living in Rome for the past 20 years or so. Caroline and I met near Vatican City, and she proceeded to walk me through all the major squares, fountains, the Colosseum, the Forum, the Parthenon, and so on. We walked our legs off, but thanks to Caroline, I ended up seeing a good bit of Rome and feeling much better about the city. My friend Ron joined me in Rome, but he had just had a very negative experience in the Dublin airport, where a clever thief had managed to grab his passport and wallet containing 3,000 euros he had just been paid for a workshop there in Ireland. As a consequence, he had to miss his flight and stay an extra day in Dublin, getting a temporary replacement for his passport. So when he arrived in Rome, we spent some time shopping for his replacement wallet and passport holder. The next morning, we had to jump on the metro to get to the train station. I had a bad feeling as we got onto the underground metro because the car was very crowded and we were among the last to get on. Just about every traveler I know has had their pocket picked or something stolen in Rome. Now, a gypsy woman with a baby and several small children crowded in behind us and was making a big commotion, asking loud questions for directions, but then got off before the metro took off. When we got off at the train station, Ron suddenly realized that his new wallet and new passport holder were gone. They'd been in separate buttoned pockets on the legs of his cargo pants. Clearly, two of the little kids had managed to unbutton and get into his pockets. The whole thing happened in less than 10 seconds without him feeling a thing. So once again, he'd been robbed of a fair amount of cash, credit cards, and his passport. Now, you can imagine how upset Ron was at this point. And we had a train to catch and a workshop to do. So we went ahead and caught our train to Florence and then on to Siena and then to the little town in the Monte Regione part of Tuscany, somewhere near the tiny towns of Castellini in Chianti and Poggibonsi. I won't even go into how we kept overshooting the place where we were supposed to get off the train, other than to say it was a real comedy of errors. Fortunately, there's an American consulate in Florence, so the next day we backtracked to Florence and spent the whole day there with Ron being cross-examined and reprimanded for having lost valuable U.S. documents twice in one trip. But ultimately, he got his replacement passport. The Ebbio Retreat Center in Tuscany was incredibly picturesque, just what you would imagine from the movies. A beautiful two-story stone farmhouse originally built in 1100 and completely restored, and on 13 acres of an organic farm. Communal meals on a lovely outdoor terrace overlooking the green hills of Tuscany with a castle atop one of them. Our first night there, I was really hungry, especially after the various challenges of the day. I had served myself a plate full of food from a buffet that was set out with a variety of delectable-looking edibles to choose from. In the course of gobbling down this meal, I speared with my fork what appeared to be a piece of sausage, but I found it impossible to chew up. It had a vaguely familiar taste, but seemed abnormally tough and yet spongy at the same time. So finally, I took it out of my mouth, only to realize that it was a cork. Evidently, the cork had fallen out of the bottle when I was putting vinegar and oil on my salad. We all had a good laugh about that one. Of course, there were other adventures and misadventures, but I don't want to run on too long with my travelogue, so I'll shorten the whole thing up by giving you a quick rundown on the rest of the trip. Our workshop was successful, but had fewer participants than we hoped for. At the end of it, I wasn't sure where I wanted to spend my second week. I knew I wanted to be by the ocean, and had thought I might go up to Cinque Terre. However, I mentioned to the owners of the Ebbio Retreat Center that I also had thought of visiting the Amalfi Coast south of Naples. They let me know that they own a beautiful place in Sorrento, and they would let me have an apartment there for a good price. Well, that was just the sort of spontaneous opportunity I was hoping for. So I ended up going to Sorrento via train through Florence, Rome, and Naples. And it turned out that my apartment was in a beautiful mansion poised on a cliff overlooking the ocean right in the center of Sorrento. It couldn't have been more beautiful. I felt very good that I had not made set plans and instead trusted fate to lead me to a good place. Using Sorrento as a home base, I took a hydrofoil for a day on the incredibly beautiful island of Capri. I took the chairlift up to the top. I hiked up from Capri to Capri Centro, which is kind of halfway up, and then I took a chairlift all the way up to the top and went to Anna Capri, and just incredible views. And then on a subsequent day, I took a very scary bus ride down the coast to explore the villages of Amalfi and Positano. And if you've never been to these incredibly picturesque places, I suggest you Google them. There have to be some fantastic pictures on the web. And that, dear friends, was my vacation. I returned home satisfied and exhausted, and I'm now trying to recover from it all.
This is Ryan Welly from Greeley, Colorado, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Ryan, thanks for that voice transition. I was so happy to find a couple of these in my Chingo box upon returning from Italy. I encourage others of you to follow Ryan's example. All you need is a microphone and then click on the My Chingo logo on the shrinkwrapradio.com website. Also, while I was in Italy, several listeners alerted me that somehow episode number 46 on the narcissistic personality had become corrupted and they were unable to download it. I reported the problem to Podshow and just heard from them today that it's been fixed. So thanks to those of you who let me know about this problem. If you didn't get to hear that episode, I highly recommend it. Speaking of Podshow, with whom we're affiliated, some of you may get this show by listening to it at podshow.com, but I need to let you know that their system has a, so far, chronic problem which restricts you to the most to the 25 most recent episodes. The Shrink Wrap Radio episodes tend to be topical and not time-dependent, and many listeners like to go back and listen to all the episodes from the beginning. So if you want to listen to any of the early ones, particularly the first 25 or so episodes of Shrink Wrap Radio, you need to get them from our website, shrinkwrapradio.com, or get them through iTunes or some other podcatcher. Now, longtime listeners know that I like to welcome the people who've recently signed up on our Frapper map at www.frappr.com/shrinkwrapradio. I'm happy to report that the number of pins on our Frapper map has grown while I've been gone, but I have a problem I'm hoping someone out there can help me solve. Evidently, the Frapper interface changed while I was gone. It used to list the names and locations of the people who've signed up. It doesn't seem to be doing that anymore, so I have no way of knowing what new countries or what new people have joined. Can anybody tell me how to get that back? Which reminds me that I had promised I was going to randomly draw a person from the Frapper map to send a copy of my serial killer book to at the end of the year. That'll be hard for me to do without that list, so let me know if there's a way to get it back again. By the way, Rob Walsh of Podcast 411 interviewed me on his show just before I took off for Italy, and I've put a link to that interview at shrinkwrapradio.com if you'd like to hear it. We're continuing with our GoDaddy promotion, and you'll find several discounts on our website. For example, you can get a domain name for a whole year for only $6.95 by using the discount code SHRINK3.
Hi, this is Simon from New Zealand, and you seem to have found yourself on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thanks, Simon in New Zealand, for using My Chingo to send that transition. We received a bunch of email while I was away in Italy. It really brightened my trip to see that email come rolling in on my BlackBerry. I'll only read a view today and catch up with others in the next show or two. Ken Valerio, an artist and faithful listener, whose website I announced in one of the last shows, writes, "Dr. Dave, you are awesome. Truly great to be so generous in sharing my website with your listeners. Thanks a bunch. You have been hard to keep up with lately, so productive, but I think the shows are only getting better. The Ericksonian show was amazing. He was so enthusiastic and someone right up my alley." He's referring to the show with Bill O'Hanlon. "I love the creative Zen-like approach to healing, and I'm going to read one of those books about Erickson. Also, the music has seemed much more integrated to the whole, and the selections seem a bit more serious in a way that I think your show deserves. I'm saving your most recent show, Religious Delusion, for my trip this weekend, going to Florida to see my folks, and I want to savor what is a very special topic for me, having had my own religious delusions, still finding them the occasional temptation, so I can't wait. I'm sure it'll be good. Oh yeah, I also like the way after an interview you take a little time to talk in a conversational way with the audience, sharing your thoughts. Happy traveling. All my best, Dr. Dave. You're the greatest. I'll record a transition soon. Ken Valerio." Hey Ken, thanks so much for your ongoing support. I really appreciate it. Here's another from a longtime faithful listener. "Hi, Dave. Kim here, the teacher in Yuba City, California. Just a note to tell you I'm still listening. Due to a road trip in northern Arizona and southwest Utah with my two sons, and then a trip to Crater Lake in Oregon, I missed several of your episodes, but have almost caught up now. Thanks especially for the episode on narcissistic personality disorder with Dr. Hess. Very interesting and informative. You may remember I suggested a foray into the personality disorders, and you came through. Take care and keep the episodes coming." Yeah, Kim, and also I've been trying to get a really noted author and expert to do an interview on the psychopathic personality, and for one reason or another he's had to keep postponing that, but sooner or later, I hope to nail that one down. I think you'll really like it. And then finally, here's a voice message from Pan Pan, a listener in Shanghai.
"Hello, Dr. Dave. I'm just another Dutch guy listening to your show, Ask Adam Curious. But I'm residing in Shanghai since 2003. So you got also listeners, or you got listeners also from Asia, in case you are wondering. I am a male kindergarten teacher by profession, which is exceptional, but teach English in Shanghai at East China Normal University at the moment. It's hard to get English literature, even in Shanghai. Podcasts are really my escape out of disinformative English China. I got a major in the interdisciplinary young learners pedagogy and child psychology. And I'm interested in majoring in science, anthropology, sociology, neurobiology, philosophy, pedagogy, quantum physics, politics, and history. I wanted to study clinical psychology when I was 20, but the job market was really bad at the time. What I would like to hear more about is the neurobiological proof of, for example, theories on dreams and other cases in your shows. I really enjoy your show. What I think about Dr. Daily Dave's podcast, well, I'll provide you with an Asian saying, or actually a Chinese saying, and a Latin one. The Chinese is, you can't push a cow's head down unless it's drinking water by its own will. The Latin one is, by learning you'll teach. By teaching, you will learn. Take care, Pan Pan."
Pan Pan, thanks so much for that audio comment. It may be unusual for a guy to teach kindergarten, but I think it's a wonderful calling, and little kids certainly could use more good male role models. I'll keep your request for more interviews that stress the neurobiological foundations of various theories. I'll keep that in mind. I think at the time of your message, you'd only gotten as far as show number 25, and I think there may have been some of what you're asking for in later shows. At least I hope so. So I think that better wrap it up for today. Please help us to grow our audience by spreading the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and colleagues. If you've got a podcast or a blog or MySpace or LinkedIn page, please put a link and a plug there. And remember, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where our name is ShrinkPod. And of course, I've already mentioned MyChingo as another way of leaving your voice messages. Thanks again to our guest, Netan Chokling Rinpoche, for the interview. Our next show will feature Dr. Lorna Catford on the subject of autism. I'm hoping that's a topic that many of you will find interesting. We close with a piece of PodSafe music which seems particularly appropriate for our interview with Rinpoche. It's called Peace Around the World, performed by Freedom People. You'll find a link to this tune in our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
It doesn't matter about your color or your creed. It doesn't matter which religion you believe. It doesn't matter if you're rich or if you're poor, whether you're a politician or one who fights the war. It really makes no difference what country you are from. Nobody wants to lose their daughter or their son. Take a moment of silence, say a prayer for everyone. It's time to stop the violence, lay down the guns and sing peace around the world. Send peace around the world. Peace is coming to us all. Love is universal, and music is the voice. Everyone can live in peace if we all make the choice to love. There's got to be a way to stop all the war. Love's the only thing that's worth fighting for. Nothing's worth the taking of another person's life when it's love we should be making to end the world's strife. The day will come when everyone will live in harmony and celebrate the brotherhood of all humanity. Divided we will fail, together we'll achieve it. But before it can happen, we've all got to believe it. Peace around the world. Peace around the world. Peace is coming. Peace is coming. Peace is coming to us all.